Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is 050 on the radio. Y'all know this is January 14th, 2016. I'd like to thank my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, for the talent and the opportunity to do this show. We have a lot of stuff going on. I'll just say that we got the national championship game that happened on Monday night, an absolute classic. We have the most exciting round of playoffs almost yearly in the NFL, the divisional round. We have NBA going on. Then we have time. We can even talk about college basketball with the national championship game. And we even have coaching hirings, but we're going to go there the last if we get to it. But got to go to the national championship game, one of the real classic games. You're going to see Alabama found a way to pull it out at the end, 45-40. Now, I know a lot of people look at that 40 by Clemson like, whoa. How in the world did Clemson score 45? Well, actually, the question is, how did Alabama score the 45? Big time performances on the offensive end. Derrick Henry, 36 carries, 158 yards. He scored three touchdowns. Jake Coker with a big day, 16 of 25 for 335 yards and two touchdowns. And how about O.J. Howard? 5 catches, 208 yards, and 2 touchdowns. I've been waiting for him to do something all season. He was running under – I was hoping he would run under the radar the whole time so one of my teams could pick him up kind of late, but that was a fairy tale. And so right now, if you look at Alabama, you're like, whoa, a whole ton of offensive output right there. But the fact of the matter is, was neither one of those players was the best player in the game, because the best player in the game was clear. Sean Watson, Clemson quarterback, 30 for 47, 405 yards, 4 touchdowns. He did have an interception, and it was big. He also had 20 rushes for 73 yards. He had a QBR of 93.7, the highest for a losing quarterback since 2004. He was fantastic, and he was doing it out there. And a lot of people tried to compare it to Vince Young. Some people said it was better than Vince Young. You can say what you want. Hey, the Bama defense stout. There's no doubt about that. Unreal. But what won the game for him was the third part. Everybody talks about Alabama's defense. You got to give credit to the offense for coming up big. But what won the game? Alabama special team. Hey, tied 24-24. They do an onside kick and recover it. They came up early in the first, late in the first half, blocked a field goal. That was key. And then, what you could say was the biggest play of the game, the biggest play was the onside kick. But the second biggest play of the game, Kenyon Drake's 95-yard kickoff return, and the unbelievable stretch. Can somebody please show to Deshaun Jackson the stretch? He took off from the 5 and stretched to the end zone to get that thing into the end zone. An extraordinary play by a guy. Really, he's been battling the play for the Crimson Tide. He's had a broken arm. He's had I can't remember what else he hurt. I can't remember what he hurt this year here. But just one of those games you will remember for a long time. And you know what it felt like? It felt like I used to feel in the 80s. When the national championship used to be on for college basketball, you knew it was going to be a good game. Somehow, some way, you knew it was going to be a really good one. that it was just like that. That is national championship number 5 for Nick Saban, his 4th at Alabama, 4th in 7 years. He has dominated college football. He has dominated the SEC when he's been in it. And you got to give him credit. People are asking, is he the greatest coach of all time? Well, you know, you can say, yeah, maybe. See, you can throw his name into the record with a lot of people. Right now, I don't even know if he's the best coach currently, because you got this other dude down at Ohio State. If Saban doesn't win the national championship, he normally does over there, Urban Meyer at Ohio State. Now Saban has 5. You look at the the fact that he's right next to Bear Bryant. Bear Bryant has 6, and is there a chance he could get it? Yeah, there's a chance he can get it. Saban isn't the youngest of coaches, that's for sure. But, hey, he had the chance to get it because next year Alabama's going to be loaded again like they always are. So we'll see what happens there. But congratulations to Alabama and the Crimson Tide. Hey, personally, I cannot stand Alabama, but that's what they have done in the past. Right now, they are the best college football state in America, not even close. How about 6 of the last, 8 national championships? 6 of the last 8? Yeah, I believe 6 of the last 8 national championships. Just unbelievable. They have been a rolling. I'm sorry, 5 of the last 7. That's what it is. 5 of the last 7. Okay. All right. Man, I don't know how I missed that one. But anyway, 5 of the last 7 with Auburn winning it. Remember, Auburn came close. That's what I kept on thinking. 6. Auburn came close to beat Florida State as well. So big time. Got to give it to the state of Alabama. They have been doing it big over there. Well, got to go to the NFL. It's playoff time. I almost want to skip this, talk about the coaching hire in Cleveland, but hopefully I can put that in the 2-minute warning. Okay, you have 4 very interesting matchups here. First one, it might be as interesting as any. Now, this is one of those coaching matchups where you're like, this could be pretty good. Andy Reid versus Bill Belichick. You're talking about 2 of the winningest coaches in this generation. You can argue 2 of the best head coaches in this era. Only thing is, Andy Reid doesn't have a Super Bowl. So, therefore, can't say Andy Reid is best definitively because you have someone like Tom Coughlin, who has 2 Super Bowls in this era and in the same division. So you can't say he definitively is the second best. But if you look record-wise, you look at achievements of the team, they did play in the Super Bowl 1 year here, and we'll see how this one works out. Andy Reid versus Bill Belichick looks like it's going to be a good one. It's going to be in New England. Hey, how about Gronkowski? He's 1 touchdown from tying Vernon Davis and Dave Casper for having the most touchdowns in the playoffs. Well, that by a tight end. You believe that? That? I mean, sometimes you just look at it and you're like, whoa. Just signed by Gronkowski and the Patriots also. So they're going to have to really concentrate on protecting Brady, because Brady pretty much has a offensive line that has been makeshift all year. And you come up, I believe he has had, 39 different combinations for the Patriots. But you know how Brady goes in the playoffs. Matter of fact, how about this? Brady has a chance to set a record that is so underrated. He's thrown 3 touchdowns in the last 3 playoff games. If he does it again, it'll be the best anyone has ever done. Four consecutive games, no one has done that in the history of the NFL. But how about this? How about this for the Patriots? Another underrated stat. That they have a chance to go to their fifth straight AFC championship game. There's only one team that's ever done that. That's my Raiders, 1973-1977. That would be, you know, one of those marks that, again, you just say, man, how much success can one team have? All right, over there in Arizona, the Packers will be coming to town, and they got to have a little swag with them. You know, they come up here and beating the Skins. They they probably feel better about themselves than they have in a while. Rodgers had a nice day. They had the running game going. Didn't implode. But they're playing the Cardinals. Hoo-wee. And you know the Cardinals, they have been something good this year. Carson Palmer. This year, how about this? Everybody talks about this and that. Carson Palmer couldn't handle the blitz and this and all this. This year, Carson Palmer, top three in completion percentage, yards per attempt, and total QBR versus the blitz this season. He has had arguably his best season ever. Check this out. And I don't think people even recognize this because you come up and you have to take a double take. You've been in the league so long. Oh, this. Zero. No wins in the playoffs by Carson Palmer. Hadn't won one. Can you believe that? Hasn't won one. Now, this game, the Packers, last week, they won their 11th road playoff game. And that is the most in the history of the NFL. Well, but how about this? The Cardinals have never lost a playoff game at home. You look at the Cardinals, and well, they're 4-0. If you remember the last time they won a home playoff game, it was against Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers in that unbelievable shootout between he and Kurt Warner. So you got to give I'm giving the Cardinals some big time credit here. No losses at home. Only unbeaten home team. And I always talk about the home field advantage here in D.C., but we're going to have to amend that because they're not in D.C. right now, and, well, that's another whole story for another day. On Sunday in Carolina, here come the Seahawks. Ooh-wee. I wonder how brash and bad they're going to be this week. They came up and they went into Minnesota, and it was as cold as it could be. They couldn't score for three quarters. Next thing you know, they put 10 up. It looked like they're going home, and Blair Walsh shakes it to the left. They keep going. So here come the Panthers. And right now, you know the Seattle's pumped because they have a chance to go to their third straight NFC championship game. They've been rolling. They won 8 out of their last 10 in the regular season. Then they won their playoff game last week. And you're talking about who could be the MVP over there in Carolina, and Cam Newton. Cam Newton, what has he thrown? One interception in the second half of the season, last 8 weeks, I believe. He's thrown one interception. But Buckaboo, in the postseason, 7 turnovers in 3 postseason games. Remember, even in the game they won last year against Arizona, they won that mostly because Arizona couldn't move the ball. Well, they had Ryan Lindley out there, their third string quarterback. They couldn't move the ball, but Cam Newton wasn't that good last year against the Cardinals, and then he struggled even more against the Seahawks last year. So the Panthers have a chance to exact revenge as well. then in Denver. Man, you got a whole bunch of stories you can run over and 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 over. But maybe that's too much. But Seattle's coming into Denver, and man, the Steelers are hurt. Not only is Ben Roethlisberger hurt, might not play. Not only is D'Angelo Williams hurt, might not play. There's Antonio Brown, who's hurt, might not play. Ladies and gentlemen, there's one team all season who has demolished the Bronco defense. That team would be the Pittsburgh Steelers. In the second half, they went bananas on the Broncos, and thus, they are the only team to take care of the Bronco defense, and the dudes that did it are all injured and all uncertain for the game on Sunday. That all being said, we tend to forget Peyton Manning is returning as a starting quarterback for the Broncos. Who knows if he loses? That could be his last game ever in the NFL. So you got storylines all over the place in this game. Unfortunately, most of it has to do with injuries. Most of it has to do with who's not going to be playing, who will be playing. That's disappointing because I think if they were all healthy, it would be, I think, the best game of the weekend. You could really have some interesting matchups this weekend. And like I said, I think I'm gonna throw my predictions out there. Got the Patriots beating the Chiefs 24-13. Don't think the Chiefs will be able to score too much on the Broncos. So I think the Patriots, it will be methodical like they normally are. But remember, they have Edelman back. Edelman to go with Gronkowski. Be too much for even the Chiefs to deal with. I believe the Chiefs will take that on home. In Arizona, I have the Cardinals beating the Packers 31-23. I have said over and over again, as bad as the Packers are offensively, their defense has been the reason they have not been a very good team at all. Just, you know, not very productive on the ground, in the air, but they were last week. They finally got their short passing game going. Then they got their running game going, and once they get their running game going, you know anything with Aaron Rodgers is good. But defensively, remember, beginning of the game, they were getting shelled, and if it wasn't for the couple of miscue by the Skins, it could have been 16-0. Instead, it was only 11-0. Huge difference. Arizona will not be making those mistakes. That's why I have it 31-23. I got an upset in Carolina. I know Carolina's 15-1. I know they're really good. I know Cam Newton might be playing the best quarterback in the league in the second half of the season. I'm still going with the Seahawks because the dude who was absolutely the best quarterback in the second half of the season, Russell Wilson. 24-20. I have them taking out Carolina. Hey, nothing against the Panthers, but I do believe the Legion of Boom will show up this game. They showed up last game, but the fact is they did have the last drive go down the field with the pass interference on Cam Chancellor and getting all the way down to the 10 and then the missed field goal and the touch. And we know they've had their problems in the fourth quarter. I believe the Seahawks will be up. And just like in the regular season, I think Carolina will come back. At this time, I think they will fall short, even with it being at home. And in Denver, I have the Broncos winning 24-10. I think with Roethlisberger, Williams, and Brown being all uncertain, I do believe they will be limited, even if they do play. If they're limited, they're in trouble. I think they're going home 24-10 at the Broncos winning. All right. Got to talk a little NBA here. And has anybody paid attention to the standings this year? Boy, normally I'm always talking bad about the Eastern Conference. mean, how many years consecutively has the Eastern Conference been the secondhand conference? I mean, let's face it. If you look at the NBA in the last, let's say post-Jordan era, it has been dominated by the Western Conference, particularly one, San Antonio Spurs and Los Angeles Lakers. Both of those franchises, they have 10 of the championships right there. So when you look at that, you're like, whoa, where there's no way anybody else, anyone else can win any championships. But the Eastern Conference this year is taking over. First time in almost 18 years, they have come up and they are now doing well. All you have crazy balance in the Eastern Conference. Yeah, we know the Cavaliers are running away with things. Well, I wouldn't say running away. They're up 4.5 games. But the fact is, from the 5-game difference in the loss column, so you're looking at the East where every game matters. I mean, you come up, you lose 2 or 3 in a row, you could jump from number 2 to number 8 in a matter of a week. So the Eastern Conference is going to be like the Western Conference. Everybody's going to be looking at it and what's going on in that conference nowadays, because you got teams like the Detroit Pistons and that Orlando Magic, who people didn't even expect to be in the playoffs. Here they are in the playoffs now. I mean, who are these guys? The Pistons come up, they lose Greg Monroe. They don't have Brandon Jennings. Now to get Brandon Jennings back, they're about to trade him. Well, if they trade him, they're going to get some more assets for him. So now they could be even better. You got Orlando. Who was the last free agent Orlando picked up? Yet, you look at their team, and you start scratching your head, well, how are these guys any good? Then Victor Oladipo, he's not even starting. He's coming off the bench. Where are they getting their stuff from? Well, don't forget, you got, you know, one of my favorite coaches over there, Scott Skiles. He's coaching them, and they are playing hard every night, which is what he demands from his team. You got Nikola Vukovic having arguably an all-star season. And you got Tobias Harris playing well. And like I said, you got Victor Oladipo, who was your number 2 pick 3 years ago, coming off the bench with this team. Unbelievable. The Eastern Conference is going to be crazy. Look, and how about the teams who aren't in the playoffs right now? Ooh-wee, I know I'm going to get some people upset now. Didn't really want to say this, but hey, look at the Eastern Conference. That's right, the Boston Celtics. They're not in the playoff race right now. Now, yeah, I know I'm going to hear it, but the fact is they aren't. The New York Knicks, they're not in it either. I'm going to hear it from the same person on that one. I'll be glad when Carmelo Anthony can make the playoffs once in a while, and then I know I'm going to hear it now. The Washington Wizards, excuse me, aren't they supposed to be the team in the Eastern Conference Championship this year? They're not in it either. And then you come up, I know, my team, Charlotte Hornets, they're not in it. They're looking outside in. So you got 4 teams you expect to be in the playoffs this season. They're looking up, trying to get in the playoffs. Well, who's going to be knocked out? Again, you have Orlando and Detroit, but who else? After that, you got Miami. You got Indiana Pacers, who are a different team now that Paul George is back. You got Atlanta, the Bulls. Then you got Toronto and Cleveland. How are you going to shuffle those teams in and out of the playoffs? It's going to be a dogfight for the playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. Even funnier, how about the Western Conference? Are you kidding me? Okay, the Western Conference, they got their normal 7 teams over 500. They don't have 8. Normally they have 10 or 11. This year, they have fallen off, and so bad so that the 8th place team, they're under 500. Not only are they under 500, they're 4 games under 500. They're not even close. And then if you even go even further, how many years consecutively has the Western Conference had teams 5, 6 games over 500 that missed the playoffs? with a team that's right now outside the playoffs, are the Portland Trailblazers. They're 7 games under 500 now. Ladies and gentlemen, it's halfway in the season. It's the midway point, which is why we're talking about the standings. And the Portland Trailblazers are 7 games under 500. Damian Lillard's over there, and how in the world they're I understand losing LaMarcus Aldridge. Good grief. What about the Utah Jazz? How in the world are they the eighth-place team? You talk about an NF offensive team. That is one Utah Jazz. Utah Jazz, I don't know, I'm scratching my head even thinking about it. Utah Jazz, they're 27th in scoring. They average 96 points a game. How about this? They're 30th in assists. They're not an offensive team under any circumstances. Their leading assist guy, he's Gordon Hayward. He's also their leading scorer. But Gordon Hayward in assist, he only throws 3.2 a game. 3.2 a game leads you in assist. It's embarrassing. What is going on with Utah? But the fact is, they hold the fort for defensively. They give up 96.8 points a game. And even though that's -7 in the league, and points allowed, they hold people off. They are so much better now that Rudy Gobert is back, being a force in the middle. His height and length gets on any team's nerve because he's just able to block shots from almost anywhere, where he might be one of the top five rim protectors in all of the NBA. But we'll talk at a different time about that. Well, down to the 2-minute warning. Got to mess around there talking about Hugh Jackson. I didn't know if I'd be able to get him in, but we're going to talk about him now because we do have our 2-minute warning. Hugh Jackson comes up, and he was hired as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. I don't know. It's going to be a whole bunch of fire with this one. But why is it that the African-American coach in the NFL always get the worst job? Now, look here. I'm not going to absolve the NBA or baseball under any circumstances. Look here. I will be happy and glad when my Los Angeles Lakers hire an African-American coach for a good team. I know Byron Scott's the head coach right now, but the Lakers are the worst team in their franchise history, and they give them that team. Why not give them a good team? But we know they're going to let them go before a good team is here. Meanwhile, I'll go back to the NFL. So, Hugh Jackson, he comes up, and he goes to the Cleveland Browns, which has been the worst NFL franchise in all of the NFL in the last 12 years. Hugh Jackson will be their eighth head coach. Since 2004, he's been their eighth head coach. Eight. How do you have eight head coaches? I mean, you can just remember the names. Butch Davis, Terry Rubisky, Romeo Crennel, Eric Mangini, Pat Shermer, Rob Chudzinski, and Matt Pauline. Now you got Hugh Jackson. How do you do that as a franchise? They have been awful. Well, they don't have a quarterback because Manziel, the fiasco, has already blown up in their faces. And this is what Hugh Jackson has to fix. And he's supposed to fix it in how long? Because if you look at Lovie Smith, now you're saying you only have 2 years to fix in Cleveland what they haven't done right since the franchise reopened in 1998. They haven't done anything right, in almost 2 decades, and pretty much Hugh Jackson pretty much has, 2 years to fix it? The plight of African-American coaches. I've been telling you, it's been rough. All right, well, I know we've been scheduled to do it at 6 o'clock, but I'm going to say it's 9 o'clock next Monday. So we're going to stick with 9 o'clock next Monday. Toodaloo, and bye-bye.